Hello and welcome back to another episode of Adventures Through Asian Cinema, where your hosts Ben and Jack go through films from different Eastern countries. Today we're covering our first film from India, from a director who has been a hot topic over the last year or so, S.S. Rajamouli. His 2022 film RRR seems to have taken the world by storm, so I thought I'd show my good friend Ben the first film I ever saw from Rajamouli, the 2012 film Igar. Ben, as your first Rajamouli film and possibly your introduction to Telugu cinema and Masala films in general, what did you make of Igar?
Oh my gosh. there's just not enough words to really describe this experience. So I should start off by telling everyone that this is like the second film I've watched from India ever. So I am extremely unfamiliar with Indian cinema. My expectations going in were like, okay, there's gonna maybe be some song and dance numbers, some inventive and exciting camera work, but like beyond that, I had no idea what we were working with. The only other thing beyond all that was just the long run times. There's like 2.5 hours seems like the minimum for like a mainstream Indian film.
Yeah, for this
film.
Sort of stuff, yeah. Because they're called like masala films in that they're kind of like blends of different genres. Like they throw everything in the mix. Like it's comedy, it's family, it's adventure, it's a song and dance thing, it's a revenge thing, it's an action thing. It's all under one roof. That seems to be like a very popular form of cinema out in India, which hasn't quite translated over to the West, but I'm so glad films like this exist.
Yeah, and so I'm not gonna lie, I was a little bit like scared going in, not scared, but you know, it was a daunting thing. I'm like, two hours and 40 minutes of a movie from a place I'm not that familiar with, and apparently it's somehow about a bug. I was like, how's this all gonna work out? And I have to say that I was totally blown away. This is like what I would want our mainstream movies to be like. And I know that an easy criticism to levy at me is, Ben, you don't really watch that many new movies. But every once in a while when I do, or when I would watch what was big in the theaters, you know, like 2016 and back beyond that, it all just kind of felt like boring and everything felt the same. A lot of the comedy felt forced. A lot of the action didn't feel embraced. And honestly, one thing I'm going to compliment this movie for big time is you could look at it and be like, there's a lot of CGI here, this looks aged, whatever. But like they fully embraced what the technology was at the time. And I think it actually looked really good. They weren't trying to like hide anything. They just embraced it. Like, this is going to be a movie, a revenge movie about a guy that's reincarnated as a bug,
as a fly.
Yeah. Like, and I was like, this is, it's wonderful.
It works within its limitations, and the story itself is very simple, but the way it's executed is very lavish and very energetic. And I feel like that comes down to Rajamouli as a director. All his movies just move so fast. Like, they are edited to like snip snap degrees. They just move. They're fun. They're engaging. There's not really moments of levity. Maybe in a couple of the song numbers you can sort of take a breath and sort of like recompose yourself, but a lot of it just sort of hits the ground running and goes and goes and goes.
Yeah, and I think that one of the reasons that this is so successful, at least as someone that is watching it, is just like, it doesn't, I felt like every scene had meaning. Like you said, it's edited very well, and so it has this long runtime, but it actually doesn't feel that long. And it really was just embracing what it was. Like, it's here to be a good time. It's here for you to have fun. I think sometimes movies lose sight of that. Like, at the end of the day, we want an experience where we can all get in a room, laugh at things, look at things in astonishment.
Yeah, I feel like this sort of area of Indian cinema is very, like, populous, very popular, making movies to be seen with lots of people, very entertaining, very versatile, and just very fun and silly and not too self-serious and just something memorable as well. You'll never forget the first film you see about a man being reincarnated as a fly to seek revenge.
No,
it's a wild story.
And it's genuinely very funny. And despite any of its, you know, maybe there is like a lack of levity and stuff, but the characters are charming. I mean, even the villain is like funny. Everything about the villain, movie just works.
So Sudeep, who is the villain, he's played by the actor Sudeep, so I don't know if there's much connection between him and the director at all. I know he's worked with him in a couple of movies, but he plays himself, or like a fictionalized version of himself, as like this classic cartoonish businessman tycoon who thinks he can get any woman he wants, falls in love with the main lead lady in this, and the only thing stopping him is our main character.
Played by Nani, yeah.
Yep. Nani, they also, it's like Jackie Chan. Jackie Chan plays Jackie Chan in so many movies. So Nani played Nani in this one. Takes him out, kills him, and the crux of the film is basically he is reincarnated as a regular housefly, slowly regains his consciousness, tries to communicate with his lover that he is in fact Nani in housefly form, and then not only take revenge on Sudeep but like torment him like properly, like I saw the devil style, sort of ruin this man's life through like wild antics.
Yeah, we need Steven to watch Iga. But no, seriously, I mean, this Nani reincarnated as this fly, he just fucks with this man to no end, but the guy deserves to be fucked with. I mean, what he did was atrocious.
Yeah, he is so cartoonishly villainous, and it sets up, this is a very basic story of good guys versus bad guys. And even the good guys, you're like, this guy has some very strange problems with his attitudes towards women. He's a massive simp, he's very desperate, but like, it paints a fine line between heroes and villains, basically. It signposts that very early on, with Nani building his own sort of MacGyver spotlight because the actress, Bindu is working on like this 3D model thing in the dark, and there's like a power cut, and our introduction to our main character is him rigging this spotlight out of like a battery pack and a torch, and right from there you realize how inventive this film is going to be and how fun and not self-serious it's going to be. It sets the tone right at the get-go.
Yeah, and I think another thing that I would love to commend this film on is it paints that very like stark difference between the hero and the villain, but I don't ever feel like the villain crossed any lines. Like, he's gross with women, yes, and he's nasty, but it never crosses that line where you're like, I think this is like inappropriate for a lot of people. Like, at the end of the day, it's still handled
like
well. It's handled very
PG-13.
Well,
PG-13, it's very almost like family friendly oriented. Like, you can kind of show this to anyone,
yeah,
and you know, they'll get something out of it and not be too like offended with its depictions of things. But yeah, he is murdered. He's murdered by Sudeep and his gang of thugs, reincarnated as a fly. And there's like a nice chunk of time spent like just observing the world through the eyes of a fly. It's very childlike. It reminds me a lot of like Pixar. It's like silent storytelling of him just having like these playful interactions with the everyday life. And then it shifts back into he wants to take revenge on Sudeep, and it's split in two halves, as most Masala films are, and just before the interval, he causes Sudeep's car to crash and etches onto the windscreen in like the water or the dust, whatever, I am going to kill you.
Yeah.
And that's when Sudeep realizes he's been properly terrorized by this fly Nani in reincarnated form. And then the second half of the film is basically them just plotting and planning to get Sudeep.
Yeah, and I feel like, I'm, as someone excuse me, as someone that hasn't watched many Indian films, maybe you can kind of paint a better picture for me, but like the first half was kind of like what I expected, right? Like it's almost a little soap opera-y at times, yeah. And everything is like extra heightened, mm-hmm. And then when it clicked for me though, and it was towards the end of the first half, is when you do get that kind of that music number with Nani and Bindu.
Yes.
And you're this is charming. You're like, I enjoy this. And then of course the movie kind of takes it away from you where.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. It's like a proper, like I can imagine people having problems with this style of filmmaking just because it is everything under one roof. Mm. It is melodramatic. It is soppy. It's comedic. It's musical. It has this thriller angle to it. It's action-packed. It's a lot to take in, but I think the way it's edited and the general story progression of the direction helps it to be like quite accessible to anyone.
Yeah, and so that first half, I felt like the first half kind of served as a good introduction to what I think a lot of Indian cinema in general will be like. And then that second half is where I was like, okay, I love the movie. And I'm assuming that this is kind of like, this is what sets this director apart from other directors. Here's a movie about a fly and it's going to be entertaining as hell. And I genuinely, as soon as he showed up as a fly, I loved the movie, like every second of the movie from that point forward. I liked the first half. It's a little slow at times, though.
Just sort of like setting into it, you know, testing the waters, getting the feel for the rhythm, getting a feel for this world, this direction. Because it is an acquired taste. Like not everyone will want to sign up for 2.5 hours of this like masala epic.
Right.
But some people like me will just eat it up. Yeah.
No, yeah, I loved every single minute of that second half. Every time I thought, maybe this like fly portion is kind of like wearing out its welcome, I'm like, no, it's not, because something brilliant would happen. Like you said, there's the will kill you scene, then there's just like Bindu finding out that's Nani, and it's kind of like heartwarming. You're like, dang, I like really love this fly.
It's very strange. Yeah. Like, yeah, absolutely, it is. Like you have so much empathy for this man in the beginning you were kind of skeptical about, because he just seems to be forcing himself upon this poor girl. But as these sort of fairy tale stories go, she automatically falls in love with him and loves him in fly form and all this, that, and the other. I think one reason I take this just so on surface level is because it's presented as a bedtime story.
Mm-hmm.
So it's bookended with, you know, a child in bed. I think it's just over like narration over the credits, like tell me a story, dad. And dad's like, I don't know. And he just starts to make up this story about this fly. And that's why all like the sort of nonsensical and the fantastical things that happen within the film, you take it with a pinch of salt, because this is just an extravagant bedtime fairy tale.
It's a great bedtime fairy tale.
It's a great... If my bedtime stories took 2.5 hours long to tell, maybe I would have got less sleep as a child. But I wish I'd seen this as a kid.
Another thing that I love is that I feel like... And I can't necessarily think of any great examples off the top of my head, but I feel like with a similar type of premise, like a person becoming a bug or something like that, movies might rely on like some inner narration, some like monologues, or even go as far into just like doing a voiceover for the person that is now an animal or a bug. I loved that everything was communicated just through like
visually,
through body language of the fly. Yeah. Like it's moving its arms. And then also the music numbers played a big part too. So everything that you were informed from, I thought was like really smartly handled, but also just fun. Like it would have gotten really old to hear someone like trying to
doing
speak
like a
as
fly
the
voice.
Yeah, no, it would have been terrible.
I like how simple it is by like visually communicating things on screen, you know, show don't tell, and even things like he's writing in the water and stuff like that.
Yep.
I think there's so much personality that comes through with that performance rather than having like a squeaky voiceover
for
the whole runtime.
You really do feel for this fly. You feel, because the fly is Nani, you feel for it. And I love one of the scenes that sticks out in my head, and I don't know why it sticks out, but it's just so heartwarming. It's like where Bindu has accepted that Nani is the fly, and they go to this like coffee shop, and she like pours out a little bit of like coffee for him. I was like, that's so sweet. Yeah. Like
and the
like,
waiter,
the
waiter's like, oh, you've spilled this. Like, oh no, it's for the fly.
Yeah,
and it's like, well, And that man is just very confused now, but he takes it on board and we just move on with our lives. Sometimes people drink with flies and it's fine.
Well, and as I'm watching the movie, I'm talking to a bunch of our friends over Discord. And there's a scene where Nani is the fly, like, just starts air humping. And I was like, I refuse to give a movie where a CGI fly air humps anything less than a 4 out of 5.
Taunting. Like, absolutely taunting.
I was like, this movie, some of the humor, if I had to liken it to something I'm familiar with, like, it almost reminds me of a Miike movie where, like, everything's fair game and it's just bonkers and you can't quite wrap your head around it, but you love every second of it. It's like maximalist filmmaking. I just like
it a lot. The extravagance and the throw everything at the wall approach that we often find in a Miike or like other sort of like genre Japanese cinema, I tend to gravitate towards their Indian counterparts. Mm-hmm. So Rajamouli is a director who he could tell any sort of story, but he'll tell it in such an extravagant and over-the-top manner that I find myself like really engaged. I mean, I'm not like a massive buff on Indian cinema. I'm still very much dipping my toes in. But another like popular Indian director I've seen a couple of films from is this guy called Shankar, who has similar over-the-top wacky premises done with like this bombastic style. Some of them are a bit more like intense and not so much family friendly that Rajamouli's films. He's got this one called I about this I'm going to try and explain this, but it is crazy. This bodybuilder weightlifter is deformed and turned into a hunchback and seeks revenge on the people that deformed him and tries to steal a woman, sort of like King Kong. It's a very strange film, but if you're after the sort of maximalist anything can happen, what is happening sort of movies, there are a variety of directors currently working that will give you that, and that's always what I'm in the mood for.
Yeah, I mean, I think this was probably the best introduction that you could have led me to for Indian cinema,
because it was kind of my introduction to like this era I've had over the past year or two of getting into sort of mainstream, like, popular box office Indian cinema, was seeing Igar on some top 10 list of 2012 and thinking, I need to see this. And I've seen quite a lot of Rajamouli's films, and I've gone back and seen some 70s stuff, and just India is such a fascinating cinematic world, and it has so many different eras, so many different areas, that it's very intriguing to explore. And I kept going back to Igar. I was like, yep, this is where it all started for me, is a housefly seeking revenge.
Yeah, and what's interesting is, like, we both have a few mutuals on Letterboxd that I've noticed that I would say they're more familiar with Indian cinema than we are, and they don't necessarily love these movies. And so, if anything, like, I don't think that's a bad thing, but it makes me so much more curious. I'm like, well, what Indian cinema have to offer? Because this is obviously just one side, and I liked this side 100%. A lot with this introduction.
This is very much the populace sort of stuff, but there is so much good stuff coming out of India, and there has always been good stuff coming out of India, that it's definitely going to be a country that I think we revisit a few times on this podcast, if not more. Just because there's so many different sides and areas at play here that there's going to be some very interesting stuff to discover.
Well, and since we're here and since we're talking about Iga and we're talking about this director, if you had to give like a sales pitch for RRR or if you had to compare the two, because these are the same director, I mean, what are the similarities and differences?
The energy that he brings to the productions seems to be consistent over like the 6 or so films of his I've seen. The pacing I always think is tight-knit, never a moment wasted, even though you are sitting down to watch like a 2.5-3 hour movie. I think these films need to be 3 hours. I think there is so much crammed in, but it's edited to such like a remarkable setting. Like, you can just, these films just fly by for me. RRR, I think you'd get a massive kick out of, because the story itself is larger than Igar. The effects work is much more large, and like there's a central dynamic between like two hunky dudes, and like your main characters are these fictionalized revolutionaries of India's history. It has some like meandering politics that some people will not get on board with, but it's kind of like a nationalist film, and it's all about sort of destroying the British Raj and like colonialist empires and stuff, which is very engaging. Mm-hmm. I rewatched it last month or so. It just, if you like what's on display in Igar in terms of the silliness and the action, and also sort of like the sentimentality and the heart of things, RRR has that to another degree.
So it sounds like it's similar, but almost like on steroids, which is very
literally
much appealing.
I mean,
to
like
me.
if you've seen any GIFs of RRR that I've been sending over the past year, there are crazy fights, there are crazy stunts that could not physically be done anywhere else in the world. It is an event. It is a lot, but I can't see you having a bad time with it.
I'm definitely gonna check it out. I mean, I'm not gonna sit here and say that like now that I've watched IGA, I'm gonna do the biggest deep dive on Indian
cinema.
Like I was neglecting Indian cinema, and I will no longer let that be the case. I mean, this was just so much fun. And I'd say like over the past year or so, my relationship with movies and just how I engage with them has changed a bit. I've never been the most critical person. It's always about just like tying the emotions or situations together for me and tying them to my life, but with each passing day I'm just like, you know what, if there's like a super sappy or corny movie, or you know, or like in this case a maximalist movie that just throws everything at the wall, and maybe it doesn't all stick but a lot of it does, like I'm just on board with that now. Like I'm not gonna be like, oh, this is too melodramatic for me or something. If it makes me feel something and I have a good time, that's what I want.
That's sort of the period I hit a couple of years ago, where I was like, okay, I've gone through my critical edgy phase where I refuse to watch popular cinema, and I've, you know, crossed off all these top 10 lists or whatever. But if you can watch a film, and if a film understands itself, it plays within its own confines, it's a film about a fly taking revenge. If you can't get on board from that premise alone, you won't have a great time with this.
Right.
But if you can, and you allow yourself to be immersed in this wild fairy tale world, you'll always get something out of it. Not everything needs to be a serious neopolitical drama. You can have films about flies sometimes.
Yeah. Well, and one thing that I've been, there's a lot of Japanese movies that have like a inherent quirkiness to them. Maybe they're over the top in their acting and like melodramatic too. But I've like learned to appreciate those, and that's translated to my appreciation, you know, for films across, like in India or anywhere else, even here at home in the US for me. It's like, I don't care if something is melodramatic now, like if the actor is still putting on a really good performance, that's engaging to me. If it makes me cry or something, I'm not going to be like, this movie emotionally manipulated me and I cried. I'm like, no, it did what it wanted to do and it worked and I enjoyed the experience. And so like IGA, of all the movies that I thought would, I never thought that movie would be, you know, heartwarming, even a little bit sad at times. And I mean, the premise sounded fun, but I was like, how much can they really get out of this?
How much mileage can you get out of a fly taking revenge for 2.5 hours?
Yeah, and it was
just
great.
Way it staggers that story, and it sets up the emotional arc at the beginning with Bindu and working for like this not-for-profit organization, Sudeep working for like his big business sort of tycoon-esque empire. Nani in the middle there, just sort of as like a fireworks salesman or something.
I'm not even gonna pretend that I followed everything, because as soon as the fly came into the picture, I was like, this is my focus. Like, just the shenanigans they get into, the breaking into the homes, and just the way, oh my gosh, the scene where he is, where Nani as the fly is fucking with him when he's trying to sleep, and it's like a 10 minute scene, but every second of it was just so good. I was cracking up
and
the whole time.
Sudeep sells it so well. He is such like a funny presence to annoy. Like, he has these big wide eyes and like his like heinous grin, and it's all turned upside down when this fly is terrorizing him. It's so funny to watch. He sells it so well.
Yeah, it's just everything about it is just handled so, so well. And it's one that, again, despite the runtime, I could definitely see myself revisiting Iga. And I could even see myself rating it higher. I mean, this was something I watched on my own at night, and it was, it was a great time. But, like, this would be such a big crowd. Yeah, such a big crowd pleaser.
Yeah, I was going to say, you got to show the neon trash guys this sometime.
I really do. I think they'd get a kick out of it.
Roger Mooley films I've seen all have very interesting premises. There is one with a man, very sort of like normal story about a man visiting a young woman, but he has a sentient bike who seems to have its own personality and follows him around. So that's a hook I can give you. Obviously. There's one about like reincarnation and like living a second life over again.
Not as a fly this about, time though.
not as that. There's one about like a man who goes through purgatory trying to kill death to get his life back. There's just like, they're really high concept, high energy films, and sometimes you're just in the mood for that.
No, yeah, I'm fully on board. I'm definitely going to check out more. I think I will probably watch RRR next because it's the talk of the town. Everyone seems to like
award
it.
Award season's coming along.
Yeah.
I think RRR has been a great sort of moment in like a cultural shift because it got such a wide theatrical release over in like the States and the UK. It's had such buzz around it. People have talked about it so much. There was like, oh, it's going to come to Netflix. More people are going to see it. And I don't think I've really talked to many people that have not got something out of it, whether it's just sort of like, oh, that was a bombastic experience, or like, that's opened my eyes to a new world of cinema. I think it's great.
Right. And even if it doesn't do like super well at, you know, the Hollywood type of awards.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, the fact that it's even there and it's being talked about so much, I mean, this very well could be like a little bit smaller of a version of a Parasite moment where people are like, oh, crap, this is amazing. I'm going to keep checking out Indian cinema. And like, that's amazing in itself.
Like, Korean cinema has had its moments in the West, but I can't really think of many other Indian movies that have made such a cultural impact that RRR has over the past year. And hopefully it's like this trajectory that's going to continue and people will be, you know, seeking out more Indian cinema and more world cinema and more Asian cinema.
I mean, on paper, you know, RRR sounds like, and Iga definitely was, with my experience, it sounds like everything people in the West would want from a blockbuster. It moves fast. It has stuff you just haven't seen. It's using all of the innovative film techniques it can use, and it's just fun. And at the end of the day, it's like fun. That's what you want. That's really what you
exactly
want.
It's absolutely that. And Roger Mooley is a director I can get behind in terms of just making bombastic and fun movies. I would like to see the rest of his this year or something, and I believe he's working on a sequel script for RRR, so I am very
now I need
much
to watch it even
now.
Sooner.
Exactly, man. Yeah. So yeah, that has been Iga. If you haven't seen it and for some reason have listened to this podcast, please put down your phone, your laptop, or whatever. Run, don't walk, to your nearest mom and pop video store and rent Iga from 2012, directed by S.S. Rajamouli. Ben, any closing thoughts on Iga?
Everything that you said times two. I mean, it just like, go see this movie. It's Jack recommended it to me last year. I finally got to watching it. I think watching it for this podcast was perfect. Because it's just great. It's just a fun time. And again, you get to watch a fly fall in love, fuck with someone, air thrust.
Yeah, exactly.
Like everything you could want to see a fly do, the fly does. Oh, it
exactly.
So
it's a whole fly lifetime wrapped up in 2.5 hours. It's beautiful.
Yeah. And then other than that, closing remarks, I'm sure we'll do another podcast soon. I've just been super excited about podcasting. It's still, we're halfway through Japanuary now, which is crazy to think about already. And if any listeners here listen to the Stacks, there's a strong chance that I'll be appearing on the Stacks sometime soon to talk about Japanese movies. So
we'll be doing a Japanuary either roundup or like an update at some point, maybe like towards the beginning of February. We'll do like a recap and just go through what we've all seen, like favorites and stuff like that. So that'd be fun. So make sure you're subscribed to my other podcast, The Stacks, for that. But until then, next episode, Ben will be picking another movie. And we will be watching and talking about it. So as always, you can email us if you want with comments, queries, suggestions, recommendations, complaints, all the good stuff at adventuresthroughasiancinema@gmail.com. We're also on Twitter and Instagram, which I should be using more. I keep reminding myself to do that. We're at Asian Cinema Pod. You can find both Ben and myself on Letterboxd and Twitter with the descriptions in the bio. Until then, I've been Jack, he's been Ben, and we'll see you on the next episode.
Peace.